What is going on in modern-day academia, especially in our colleges? We're going to talk about that right now with a former college professor, Dr. Robert Lopez, and he is the author of a new book called Wackos, Thugs, and Perverts, Clintonian Decadence in Academia. And Robert, welcome back to Vocal Point. By the way, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and interesting title. What's your point
Thank
there?
You, I wanted to cut through a lot of the, tiptoeing and a lot of the fog that surrounds academia, so I thought the title would get people's attention, and it would also convey that you can read it even if you're not a seasoned academic. So.
Now, you and I have talked in previous occasions, mm-hmm. and you used to have a job at a California State University, and I understand that basically political correctness drummed you out, essentially, from the institution.
Yes, I was forced to resign under duress. They, of course, will say that I just resigned, but there were all of these investigations that they had me under. They had placed reprimands in my file that were ridiculous, but I had lost all of the ability to try to get anybody to investigate what was going on. And I was called into the office of the provost in May of 2016, and he basically told me that he knew that I had been offered a job at a seminary in Texas, which is where I work now. I don't know how he found that information. He wouldn't tell me how he knew that. And he said, are you going to take this job? Because if you're going to stay here and fight, then I have that disciplinary record that's open on my desk, and I'm going to decide a punishment for you. So basically it was either quit or else we're going to put you through another couple years of these disciplinary hearings and investigations, and I decided to quit. So,
all right, well, okay, now going back to the overall issue itself of academia, we've seen just since the election, one of the first stories just shocked me. It was saying that to cope, a lot of the college students in a lot of our campuses were just so befuddled by the election results that in one school, they were literally offering the students Play-Doh and coloring books for therapy. In another school, pet therapy. In another school, just plain old counseling if you needed it. In another school, Yale, they were actually postponing tests because they didn't want the kids to take the tests under duress. And on and on, and it went from there. And now we've seen, jumping forward to the year of our Lord 2017, we've seen some protests on some college campuses, and in some cases, like in Berkeley, they managed to shut down even the ability of the controversial speaker to speak.
Right. And this is all the tip of the iceberg, because even though these are the headline grabbers, the truth is that the faculty that teaches the students day in and day out, the tenured ranks, even the adjuncts and all the administration, they've been purged of conservatives, which is why you have so much decadence and such a perverted line of thinking. It's all skewed and distorted because they're being taught by a large staff of people that only represent this tiny political part of the possible spectrum of viewpoints that Americans can have. And they have purged out of their ranks basically anyone who's conservative, anyone who's right of center. At best, maybe you can get in there if you're libertarian. So it's really extreme, and it's to the point where I say in the book, we have to get past the point where we're constantly documenting how ridiculous it is, and we have to just try to press the government to hold hearings and cut funding to it, because that's the only thing that's going to change this situation. The colleges benefit from making our children dysfunctional adults. So,
you know, it's interesting. It almost, I was explaining this at a dinner party the other night. I said, it's almost getting to the point where you might want to even, the conservative Christian parent might even want to reconsider, is college even necessary? I mean, honestly, if they're not going to learn a functional skill, but they are going to learn to hate America, to hate Jesus Christ, to hate anything good and, you know, decent in the Bible or whatever, they're certainly not being prepared for eternity. They're not being prepared well in this world. What's the point of college anymore?
Right. I don't think that there is really a strong point for certainly a four-year program at this point, because the colleges want to have students who are lost and confused and dysfunctional because then they keep on staying for extra degrees. If they had a trade and they got out after 2 years with an associate's degree and went out and fixed air conditioners or learned how to be a line cook or how to manage a hotel, et cetera, then they would leave and they wouldn't keep on paying tuition and they wouldn't be stuck with all this debt that they're paying back at high interest. So I do think that now is a good time for parents to just appreciate the radical shift in life as we know it and to consider sending your child to a trade school for 2 years and to get a degree in something very practical and wait and see whether reforms are going to take place, because the four-year programs at this point are unsalvageable. They're past the point of no return. They're not going to correct themselves, and we can't get them to change by embarrassing them or by suing them because they have lots of great lawyers and public relations experts. At best, what we can do is we can get the federal government to starve it financially. That's the only thing that will get it to change. And short of that, I think we do need to radically reconsider what we're going to do with college, whether we're even going to continue to invest in this, because it's not serving the public good. And that's the basis by which colleges and universities get tax-exempt status. They have to make the argument that they serve the common good or the public good, and rather than just benefiting the financial players at that one institution. But right now, these colleges are not serving anybody's best interests. So
you're saying the time is coming to drain the academic swamp.
Yes, I wouldn't even say pull the plug. I think we have to cut the money off, because what I've seen is that that's how this corruption and this insanity continues, because there's all of this excess money that's flowing from the government and through tuition into these university campuses. And so you have all these little offices or wings of a building where you have these people who don't really have anything to do, but they have all this money flowing into their department or their division, and so they spend their time looking up things to do, they recruit students, and they need to build up a client base. So they have to kind of tell students that there's a problem that they, as bureaucrats, need to solve. Do you know what I mean? And so they end up developing these little nests of conspirators, if you will. So they just create problems, and they interfere with everyone else learning. And in a very perverse, sick way, the country is rewarding them precisely for that behavior. They reward people for being bureaucratic and underhanded and dysfunctional and obstructive, and they punish people for being effective at their jobs. Because if you were to be a good teacher, I tried my best to be a good teacher, but if you go in and you try to give them thought-provoking material and you give them another way to think, and you expose them to great literature, there's the chance that those students are not going to be totally loyal to the political interests that are funding the school. They might not go out and vote Democratic. So to a certain degree, I'm going to start getting less grant money. I'm going to start getting fewer, extra perks like sabbaticals and things like that, because the people who are in charge of the university don't like the fact that I'm actually not feeding the students into the Democratic Party machine.
Is it that base? I mean, that stark? Let's do this. Concentrate on your own personal experiences. You used to teach what? And I understand you grew up in a gay household, and you have told the whole world that growing up, even in a case where there was love between your lesbian mother and her lover, it wasn't enough, and you needed a father figure, and that hurt you. And I guess since you've expressed it to me on the radio, I'm sure you mentioned it in class or something like that, and maybe somebody got offended. But tell us about your own story.
Well, actually, I didn't mention it in class, but what happened was I did publish things about that, and I submitted testimony to court decisions on gay marriage, and the activists off campus then flooded my campus with complaints. And, of course, they do what they always do, which is they call your dean or your provost to try to get you fired, and they recruit students to start filing complaints against you about every little thing. So that's what really happened. I was doing okay up until about 2012, which is when my first big publication came out. And then from that point forward, I was constantly being bureaucratically attacked. But ultimately, the question is, as I had colleagues who come in, and they teach them this heavily leftist-oriented interpretation of the literature. I teach English, so I was specializing in classics and early American literature. So they'll teach Anne Bradstreet as if she was a feminist who was straining against the Christian patriarchy of Puritan New England, which is ridiculous. She was a believer in Christ, and her work was very religious. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So between me and my colleague, if she's teaching this feminist version of Anne Bradstreet and I'm teaching a Christian version of it, my colleague is going to get all of the sabbaticals and the pay raises. She's going to get early promotion. She'll get grants. She'll get all this support because the people who are funding that support are, by and large, people who are beholden to the Democratic Party, and they need that ideology to be reaffirmed in the classroom and in our scholarship and in everything that we do, whereas I'm going to be penalized because I'm seen as a threat. And so that's essentially how it plays out. And it got to the point where I was driven off campus because of that. I mean, there were violent, there was vandalism on my door. There was a Chicano studies professor who sent an email, and he copied dozens of Latino professors saying that if I were to die, nobody would care. And I'm like a tree falling in the forest with no one to hear. I don't really exist. You know, which is a pretty threatening thing to yeah. say on a college campus with all of these Chicano students.
By the way, you are Latin American, aren't you? I mean,
yeah,
Robert Oscar Lopez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I fought for multicultural literature as well, but even that was also, that wasn't enough to counteract the fact that they viewed me as a Christian and as a conservative.
So you died kind of a thousand cuts. But is your case atypical?
No, I think my case is very typical, which is what this explains the numbers. See, when confronted by the fact that the number of conservatives is so small relative to the rest of the faculty, if particularly in the humanities and social sciences where it's like 4% of the faculty is conservative, even though 36% of the population is conservative, when they're confronted by that, very often they'll come up with these reasons. For instance, they'll say conservatives don't want to go into the academy, or they're just not that smart, or this isn't what attracts conservatives. When the reality is that this is what happens, is that you get there and you're targeted immediately, and every single day there are indignities and forms of discrimination that really drive you out. So that if you're conservative and you're lucky enough to get through the PhD and you get a tenure-track job, it's going to be very, very hard to get to tenure. They're going to find a million reasons to deny you tenure. I made it past tenure, but even then they found a million reasons to get me out based on all these other clauses and provisions.
Mm. And you were a teacher at Cal State University Northridge. By the
right.
way, you were saying that only 4% or so of the teachers in the soft sciences, if you will, were conservative. Well, what about the teachers in the hard sciences or in other programs within academia?
Well, within economics, economics and business has the highest ratio of conservatives. I think there it gets up to about a third.
Wow.
Somewhere between 30 and 35%. But the other industries, the other disciplines such as the hard sciences, those, I believe it's slightly higher than the social sciences and the humanities, but it's not that high.
Yeah.
You know, nowhere does it really get anywhere near to a plurality that can compete with all of the left-wing voices. So I don't have enough experience in the natural sciences to be able to speak, as a personal witness to it. But I can tell you that in the humanities and the social sciences, the environment is so toxic for conservatives that it's pretty much almost impossible to stay there. And very often it's very difficult to get support from other conservatives. Very often they want to keep their head down. They don't want to attract any attention to them, so they're not going to speak up in defense of you, and you just feel very alone.
Was the publication that you referred to in 2012, was that the one, the book that you co-edited?
No, that one came
really?
In 2015. In 2012, it was Growing Up with Two Moms that came out in Public Discourse. And
was that an article or was that a book?
It was an article, yeah, in Public Discourse.
Just an article is what all your troubles started, an article.
Well, there were troubles before that because
wow.
I was also a military reservist, and so there were a lot of people who were hostile to me over the military. I just couldn't catch a break. I mean, at every turn there was something. But that one was the one that really That drew all the attention from off campus. That was when the activists started sending a lot of letters to the administration, basically saying, you need to look for a way to get this guy out because he's going around and he's using his status as a professor at your school to promote an agenda which is completely, you know, it's totally unacceptable. He's a bigot. He's a homophobe. You know, he's horrible. So you have to get rid of him.
You know, we're basically out of time for this, but I've got to have you back because there's so many more questions I have for you. But again, I'll give the name of your book, Wackos, Thugs, and Perverts, Clintonian Decadence in Academia by Professor Robert Oscar Lopez, used to teach English at Cal State University Northridge. And thank you so much for being with us. I'll give you the website here. It is, why don't you give it to me? Because I don't see it locally.
Well, the easiest way is to just go to Twitter. If you just go to twitter.com/Baptist for Freedom, and that's
is that singular
name,
or plural? Baptist.
Sorry?
Baptist. Just
yeah, it's Baptist for Freedom.
Singular.
And the word for is as a number. Four.
Okay.
So
Baptist for Freedom. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Lopez. I look
Thank
forward
so
to talking
much,
to you later.
Pleasure.
Okay. Thanks now. Bye bye.